Welcome to Healthline 3. I'm Jade Bolexa. Heart disease is the leading cause of death for men and women in the United States. According to the CDC, every 33 seconds, someone dies from a cardiovascular disease. And joining me now is interventional cardiologist Dr. Jonathan Davis of Willis-Knighton Piermont Cardiology. Doctor, thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to remind our viewers, we are taking your calls throughout the program. The number to call is 318-219-4569 to get your questions answered about heart health. So tell us, doctor, what are some risk factors for developing heart disease?
Risk factors for heart disease, it's kind of like cooking. You got to have the right ingredients and you got to let them swim around with each other for a little while to develop heart disease. But classic risk factors include diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, a family predisposition, and then, you know, aging contributes to the risk for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Davis, what diet do you recommend to follow to maintain a healthy heart?
I think that the answer has been Mediterranean diet. I think that diet in general is a polarizing word to use with patients and the population, because I think that it's hard to adhere to. We know what we should be eating. We know we don't eat enough of that. Fruits and vegetables, you know, non-fried foods, moderation when we eat, purpose with eating. We have to remember that food is medicine, just like exercise is, and that the decisions that we make with our fork really, really, really can affect our health.
Because I know myself, I feel better when I eat healthier, when I do eat more fruits and vegetables. It definitely makes a difference. How does, we know there's been different studies about wine out there. Can red wine help your heart at all?
I think that the answer to that is that the wine industry wanted that to be the case, and there were some associations with good health with wine consumption in areas of the world where wine consumption is part of culture, but also food in moderation and food quality was improved. And these people lived in places in Europe, for instance, where they walked a lot. And so there were some inferences made that what was helping them was in fact the wine, when in fact it was all those factors together. So the straightforward answer might be that alcohol is not healthy. Alcohol in moderation is not unhealthy, but drinking a glass of wine for your heart is not necessary. It's the excuse for the wine, but you're not getting the benefit that you think you are.
And just talking about some other issues with heart health, does smoking have an impact, and how does it have an impact?
Absolutely, smoking has, and it's the most important health decision many of my patients make every day. And I say that to them, if you look at life expectancy in the U.S., we'll just round up and say we're supposed to live to be 80. Smokers put at risk 10 years of their life and the quality of their life up to that point in jeopardy by smoking. One cigarette is just as powerful as a pack of cigarettes in terms of its risk of causing a heart attack. And the good news is someone who has smoked, who quits, their risk of being a non-smoker, or their risk of a heart attack after they've quit, is that of a non-smoker after 2 years of not smoking. And so this idea that I'm just going to continue to smoke is just not a good health decision for people. Mm-hmm. So it's the most preventable form of, it's the biggest thing you can do to prevent any disease in terms of heart and vascular health and cancer, of course.
Where does exercise fit in with all this?
I think it's imperative. I think we have sedentarism is a word that's being thrown around to help as a risk factor for heart disease. So there's some good news for people. Lots of people have devices they use or wear or hold on to, like cell phones or smartwatches, et cetera, that can track their steps. A recent trial done, published recently, shows that 8,800 steps a day, not 10,000, actually can reduces your mortality. 7,700 steps a day or thereabouts reduces your risk of heart attack or stroke. The classic recommendations have been 30 minutes 5 days a week, so 150 minutes a week of just walking. So many people think they need the gym membership, and there are a lot of hurdles to exercise that are invisible. Safe neighborhoods, sidewalks. So there's some things that unfortunately communities have a responsibility to step up and try to provide for their residents. And so I have a lot of people who want to do the right things, but sometimes feel like they can't for invisible reasons. But if you exercise 150 minutes a week, you reduce your risk of a heart attack or stroke by up to 50%. I have no medicines I can write a prescription for that reduce the risk that much. And if you have a heart attack, the medications reduce future risk by 30% of another event. So exercise is imperative.
All right. Yeah, I feel like I'm always trying to hit the 10,000 steps and I never can do it. So I like that you say you can do, what did you say, 8,800?
Yeah, 8,800 steps. And anything above each 1,000 step increment from 3,000 to 8,000 is beneficial. So my message always to everyone is anything is better than nothing. Doing something, moving, is much better than sitting still.
Mm-hmm, exactly, and I gotta remember that myself. Okay, we have Mike on the phone. Mike, good afternoon to you. What is your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is about health screenings. I recently had one at Keep the Beat at the Arkansas Heart Hospital, and I had to cancel it, but it's like 6 months to get that screening. Do you recommend doing those as kind of a preventive maintenance on your body? And do you know of anywhere closer we might could do that?
Sure. I think what you're alluding to is probably a coronary artery calcium score. And this is a low radiation CT scan done to look for calcified plaque in the heart arteries as a surrogate for your risk. And this test is available in our community. In fact, I think I've been ordering this test since 2015. And it can be very, very helpful. Ideally, it's to be used in patients who are at intermediate risk of heart disease, who are asymptomatic, to help influence discussions with people about how to lower their future risk. And so, depending on where you fall in terms of age and risk and symptoms, if you're having symptoms, a screening test isn't your test. If you're having symptoms, you need to see a cardiologist and have, say, a stress test or some other type of heart evaluation. If you're, I kind of use this term, worried, well, your health is good, but you don't want to have problems and you're interested in seeing things mm-hmm. that can't be seen with traditional risk factors, this coronary calcium score is a great, great test.
Okay, and that's what I'm at, is worry well. So the best thing, even over here in Texas across the border, is just to see the doctor and see if they can order up a test?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm in Louisiana in Shreveport, and so if, primary care doctors can order this test, more and more primary care doctors know about the test, it's widely available, and the good news, at least in our health system, the cost of the test is, I think, $105. Unfortunately, no insurance provider pays for prevention. They pay for disease management and treatment, but these tests are not covered by insurance, and so it's an out-of-pocket expense to you to actually promote and facilitate a conversation about your health. And so,
a fair price.
Yeah, I mean it's not prohibitively expensive, and the information that we glean from it can be powerful. And again, you need to see a cardiologist to understand the results of the test. If you've had a heart stent or other sort of instrumentation of your blood vessels to your heart, it's not your test. You already have heart disease. And so it's for asymptomatic patients who are worried about preventing their first event or wanting to understand their risk in a better way.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm on a low sausage diet, so I just wanted to do a little self-worry and see if maybe I should do better than that.
So, keep it low sausage.
Thank you, Mike. That was a good question. What are some other tests that can be done to screen for heart disease?
I think that, you know, a lot of the routine things, I think seeing a doctor, and so having a blood pressure checked, having your cholesterol checked, being screened for diabetes, you know, and so those are the traditional risk factors. And that's what I tell some of my patients, you have none of the risk factors for heart disease, but it doesn't mean you don't have the disease. And that's really how the calcium score helps. So, you know, simple visit to the doctor. An EKG doesn't necessarily screen for heart disease. It does in some ways, but people think I have a normal EKG, I don't have heart disease. And those two things aren't the same.
All right. Good afternoon to you, Virginia. What is your question?
Yes, I would like to know if the doctor could explain this. What could be like a crawling feeling in the lower part of your leg running into your feet? His explanation for that.
Crawling feeling into your feet? That could
into
be.
Into your lower part of your leg and running into your feet.
Yeah, that could be something like neuropathy or some other process like that. That would be probably what my initial reaction to that question would be.
Oh, I was just wondering about that. Yeah.
Well, thank you for your question.
Oh, I thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And keep those calls coming, 318-219-4569. We'd love to hear from you if you have any questions about heart disease. And tell us, is there a certain age people should establish care with a cardiologist?
I think that's kind of a loaded question, asking a cardiologist that, but I don't think that you can start too young.
Really?
This atherosclerosis disease, plaque in your arteries, we know pathologically starts in 20-year-olds. So they did studies in soldiers killed in Vietnam that they found atherosclerosis in. And so you look and think about how we live 20 to 30, 30 to 40, you know, it takes, again, time and risk factors. And then you start looking at seasons in your life. And so you know, we get more concerned about our health. I'm 52. And I'm playing third quarter football, I hope it's early third quarter in the game of life. And so if you can start earlier to prevent, this is still a preventable disease. And so if you can establish early health behaviors and you have some of these screening tests like calcium scores, you know, if you're 30 and have no health trouble and you have a calcium score, it should be zero.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really recommend calcium scores for people that young because it's likely to be zero. Any non-zero number for a 30, 40-year-old, you need to be really paying attention to what that means. And so prevention starts early, and you can see what were the narratives that are out there in the culture that we're living in. Obesity, 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 metabolic syndrome, inflammation. Those are things that every person in America is aware of. When you're a cardiologist, what that means to you is that you're going to see a whole burgeoning population of people with cardiovascular disease that's preventable, but our the way we're living and how we eat and how we live and how we don't move, we're creating metabolic disease, which is manifested in, at least in the heart, with atherosclerosis or plaque or blockage.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean to be a bummer.
No, you just really made an impact, definitely. And so we have a long list of callers now. Wayne, what is your question?
Hey, doctor, how are you today?
I'm well.
I have a question. I have high, medium cholesterol, and my high cholesterol is in the good cholesterol bracket, and my bad cholesterol is in the low bracket. How does that add up to be bad cholesterol?
Well, I think the answer to this question is that all LDL is bad. And I think that I've been doing a deep dive recently into some of this language that's out there of good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. And the reality is that all the cholesterol is bad. There's a lot of debate about HDL, which has been labeled good cholesterol. And there's a lot of things that I don't need to go into. But in general, the LDL should be looked at in relationship with your risk. So the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association have risk estimators that we use to try to determine your 10-year risk of having a heart attack or stroke. Now, said a different way, our lifetime risk of atherosclerosis is 100% if our LDL is elevated. And elevated LDL is also debated. I can tell you the lower the better, and we treat patients who have heart attacks, strokes, vascular disease to LDLs of 50 to 55, and it brings into play a reluctance for patients to want to take drugs called statins. Statins are powerful, powerful, powerful medicines for lowering LDL that prevent the progression of plaque and that stabilize existing plaque so you don't have a heart attack. And so that's an individualized, very complicated question to ask. I saw a 40-year-old woman yesterday in my office who was there to discuss her LDL of 141. She has no other risk factors for heart disease. She's 40. I told her that her calcium score was likely to be zero. So we checked a specific kind of blood test called lipoprotein little a to help risk stratify her. And so I'm going to talk to her about her lab result, which was elevated, and try to have a nuanced conversation about, again, the longevity preventing atherosclerosis with a statin at 40 versus continued lifestyle modification, knowing that she's at increased risk, but she may or may not want to take a medicine for 30 or 40 years. And there's a lot of hesitancy, and we play tug of war in the office all the time about statin drugs, because there can be some complications from them. I'm not stubborn. If it's hurting you, we'll stop it. But people are reluctant to get on these things. And we do have treatment fatigue. The idea that I'm going to do this for a long, long time is a hurdle to get over in trying to prevent disease. Prevention's hard to practice. Mm-hmm. When you're in the emergency room and you're having chest pain, that stent's going to make it go away. You're on board. And we got your attention after you had the stent. It's trying to prevent the stent that's really challenging.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's good. I have a problem taking statins. Every time I take them, 7 to 9 days later, I have kidney issues.
That's a little unusual with kidney issues, I would say. But I think that there are other statin alternatives, depending on whether you would qualify those. There's a new class of drugs. It's not so new now to lower LDL, depending on what our goals are with that. And so I think that what you've just said outlines or highlights what I just said in terms of trying to have good conversations with patients about prevention and some of the hurdles that we have.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you so much, Wayne. I mean, if a primary doctor sees your cholesterol, are they likely to refer you to a cardiologist like you? I mean,
I think one of the things that I tend to notice in my practice is that the needle for this keeps moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the biggest thing that through the eyes of a cardiologist, if we're talking about primary prevention, the risk estimator is what I use to determine who needs a statin drug for primary prevention. So we're trying to prevent the first event. And what happens in primary care doctors' offices is we all know that statins are good, the doctors do, and we want our patients on them, but then having the conversation. I mean, it takes time to talk to people about prevention. And in a busy primary care doctor's office, sometimes it is best to have that conversation, you know, with a cardiology person or whoever, about what it is we're trying to prevent, what we're trying to start, and then what is the risk. Because we get these numbers, and that sometimes it's context. Every diabetic should be on a statin drug. Mm-hmm. Everybody that's had a heart attack or stroke should be on a statin drug. Every patient with an LDL over 190 should be on a statin drug. So those are easy conversations. You know, those are standards of care that have been established. It's the rest of the at-risk public that needs to have a good conversation. And the other thing that I really do with those coronary calcium scores that we talked about before is if we've estimated your 10-year risk of an event, the calcium score could either increase, make you at higher risk, or it could actually lower the risk. And so, and that sometimes is reassuring. If you look at it from a longevity perspective, we all get atherosclerosis. And so if you don't want atherosclerosis, then the lifestyle pieces all have to get in place, and then consideration of a statin drug empirically for people.
All right, we have Ashlyn on the phone. Ashlyn, what is your question?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Dr. Davis. This is Ashlyn. I just want to say thank you so much for saving my mom's life. She had a quadruple bypass on February 14th, and I just kind of want some insight on an SVT ablation for a 22-year-old.
Thank you for saying that about your mom. I'm glad she's doing well. As far as SVT ablation for a 22-year-old, if you have the most common SVT, which would be AV node reentrant tachycardia, it's probably 70% of SVTs. That's a curable problem with an ablation that puts you at low risk in with a doctor who has experience doing that procedure. So while it sounds intimidating, I'm not going to call anything routine. That is something where you balance the risk-benefit ratio, and depending on how frequent the tachycardia is and what medicines you're having to use to treat it, it's very, very reasonable to consider an SVT ablation with a low likelihood of having any complications from the procedure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Ashlyn, anything else?
No, ma'am. Other than that, I just want to say, again, thank you so much for being the best cardiology out there, and I definitely recommend you.
Oh, thank you so much.
That was so nice.
I paid her to call.
No, you didn't.
I know. I'm teasing.
That is so nice of her. Okay. We have Nathan on the line. Nathan, what is your question for Dr. Davis?
Does moderate weightlifting every day, about 30 minutes or 60 minutes a day, help?
I'm going to say that it... Go ahead.
I'm on TV.
So weightlifting it is beneficial to your health. Is it as beneficial to your cardiovascular health? Is sort of a subtle twist to that. Aerobic exercise is what you need for your cardiovascular health. Muscle strength is very important to your health as you age. Reduces, you know, you sound like you're young, so you're not thinking about the walker and fall risk and all that. But muscle mass and strength certainly are healthy behaviors, but add the cardio. Did that answer your question?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, you got to get that heart rate up, right?
Yeah, and I think it's not necessarily, you know, people love to talk about their heart rate, and everybody can monitor it. So it's really just the act of doing it, 150 minutes a week, or get your 8,000 steps, and not make it harder than that. Don't worry about your I'm in my, you know, I'm in my orange theory zone.
Okay.
You know, I think that that's great, and it's great to compete with people on the board and all that. But if you showed up to do it, you got the health benefits, even if you finished dead last.
Okay. I love it. Okay, Craig, what is your question for Dr. Davis?
Good afternoon. Doctor, I'm a 71-year-old man, and at the age of 60, late 60s, I had heart palpitations, and
you keep breaking up,
I
Craig.
I went to the emergency room.
Okay.
And they did some procedure on me. And they did some kind of, I'm thinking it's LASIK surgery on one of my chambers. And this. They said that it was a 95% cure. Is that true?
I missed a little bit of your question. I'm not sure if you went with heart palpitations in your 60s, and I don't know if you did you have atrial fibrillation?
That's what they call it.
Yeah, atrial fibrillation is probably the most common abnormal heart rhythm that we see. We see in cardiology, and so patients do have ablations to try to help manage that. If I'm kind of making some assumptions without knowing it, if you're talking about SVT like the previous caller, I think the success rates for treating that heart rhythm problem are in the upper 90s. I think if you're talking about atrial fibrillation ablation, I think that's probably a little bit higher than is what's reported. So controlling atrial fibrillation with ablations is probably approaches 80%. And atrial fibrillation ablation, at least in my opinion, I'm an interventional cardiologist and not a heart rhythm specialist, but we control atrial fibrillation with ablation. We don't cure atrial fibrillation. And so I'm making some assumptions based on your question.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Davis. We had a lot of callers today, so that was wonderful to get these questions answered. So the point is to exercise, eat healthy, and prevention. Real quick, before I let you go, what are some final thoughts today?
I think that, you know, when I think about prevention, it's really actually not so much prevention, it's awareness.
Mm-hmm.
This disease can lie indolent and be percolating along for long periods of time, decades, and then unfortunately you can have a sudden heart attack that nobody saw coming unless you look at it through the lens of a cardiologist. And so the health behaviors that we've talked about, the awareness of risk factors and a relationship with doctors to help work towards prevention are the things that we can control. You can do all the wrong things and never have heart disease. That's lucky. You can do all the right things and have heart disease. You know, many stories about marathoners dying of heart disease. And so it's marrying good fortune, good habits, and maybe some medical therapy that really, really, really can impact whether you suffer what we all want to avoid, which is a heart attack or worse from heart disease.
Where can people reach you?
My office is at Pyrmont Cardiology at Willis Knight in Pyrmont. And so, you know, we're taking new patients every day.
All right. Well, thank you so much. and have a great day. We'll see you next time on Healthline 3.